This chapter introduces the audio description tour. It is a minute long. Hello, welcome to the audio description tour for Drift, Art and Dark Matter. My name is Fiona Wright, and I'm the educator at Carleton University Art Gallery. The audio description tour will provide you with an overall description of the exhibition, as well as its specific artworks and installations. The audio description tour will lead you on a path to two different art installations, identified by tactile floor markings through the exhibition space. There will be 3 to 4 stops within each art installation. Each stop includes a description of a specific part of the art installation, and then more information and prompts for connecting with it. The audio description tour is organized as a series of chapters. The total length of the tour is just over an hour. You can skip or repeat the chapters of this tour at any time. At the end of each chapter, you will be notified when you can move to the next stop. Chapter 1, about the exhibition. This chapter introduces the exhibition and is 1 minute and 35 seconds long. Welcome to Drift, Art and Dark Matter, an exhibition of 4 contemporary artists who connect physics to art, labor, landscapes, cultures, and histories. It is curated by Sunny Kerr and was organized by Agnes Etherington Art Center at Queen's University, the Arthur B. MacDonald Canadian Astroparticle Physics Research Institute, and Snow Lab. We'll begin with a brief background about the exhibition, what dark matter is, and the site of Snow Lab. In 2019, 4 artists, Nadia Lichtig, Josepha Njam, Anne Riley, and Joel Toms, traveled to Sudbury in Northern Ontario to visit Snow Lab, a research facility built in a nickel mine 2 kilometers underground. They were invited to explore the intersections of art and science through an interdisciplinary search for dark matter. Dark matter makes up 84% of matter in the universe. Because it does not absorb, reflect, or emit light, it cannot be seen or detected by scientists directly. It reveals itself through its gravitational effects by keeping planets in their orbits and stars within their galaxies. After spending time in Snow Lab, the artists created sculptures, videos, photographs, and textiles, which are present in this exhibition. These artworks act as sensory agents that link scientific ideas of dark matter and the exploration of that which has never been directly sensed. Chapter 2, Description of the Art Gallery. This chapter provides you with a physical description of the art gallery and is 1 minute and 45 seconds long. You are on the first floor of the Carleton University Art Gallery. There is a large reception desk in front of you. You will find a tactile map of the gallery and the exhibition tour stops on the reception desk. The art gallery is a large, open room shaped like an L on its side, with the small arm pointed up. You are currently just to the left of the angle of the L. On the floor plan, the outside walls of the gallery are identified by a thick line. The floors are a lovely light and warm hardwood, and some walls are painted white, while others are purple. To your right is the small arm of the L. It is a room that is around 15 meters long by 17 meters wide and has double height ceilings and a balcony above, where visitors can look down from the second floor. This room displays works by Nadia Lichtig, including a very large floor installation. The tour stops for this space are identified by the raised circles on the map. To your left is the long arm of the L, which is a longer room that is 23 meters long by 9.5 meters wide. The ceilings are lower here, and there are 2 small partition walls that divide the space. The first partition wall has a video work by Anne Riley with comfortable seating. You may hear her recorded voice just behind you on the left. The longer room features a video and sculpture by Josepha Njam and a multi-component installation by Joel Toms. The tour stops for this space are identified with raised squares on the map. At the far end of the room, past the second partition wall, there are small photographs and paintings by Nadia Lichtig. There are two sets of stairs in the gallery, one behind you and one to your far left, both of which lead to the second floor. Between the stairs, there are three square floor-to-ceiling columns. Chapter 3, Wayfinding in the Art Gallery. This chapter provides you with a description of the wayfinding tools that are part of the audio description tour. It is 1 minute and 3 seconds long. To enhance your gallery experience, tactile floor markings will help lead you on a one-way path to each of the stops associated with the audio description tour. The first stop for each artist's work will be identified with a rectangular wood pedestal. There are subsequent specific stops in each installation that correspond to chapters in this audio description tour and are identified by tactile dots grouped together on the floor. At any point, you can pause a chapter, replay it, or skip forward. Videos and sound works are part of the exhibition as well, and we will describe them periodically throughout this tour. Large print labels are hung on the wall and are removable, allowing for closer examination of the text. Please move to the first stop on the tour. It is the introduction to an installation called Enland, The Holographic Principle by Joel Toms. This stop is marked with a square rectangular pedestal about 6 meters to your left. You may use the wall in front of you to help guide you. Pause this chapter and then play chapter 4 when you arrive. Chapter 4, Introduction to Enland, The Holographic Principle by Joel Toms. This chapter will provide you with an introduction to Joel Toms' installation, Enland, The Holographic Principle. The chapter is 2 minutes and 33 seconds long. Curator Sunny Kerr's commentary about the artwork can be found in Chapter 11, or as a printed label on the wall.
Because there are so many components to this installation, Enland, The Holographic Principle can almost be described as a mini exhibition within the main exhibition. It takes up a third of the main gallery space in the middle of the long arm of the L in a space that is about 20 feet long by 31 feet wide. Most of the space has a ceiling that is 8 feet tall, but it opens up to ceilings that are 19 feet tall. These art objects were created using imagery and materials from Joel's residency at Snow Lab. In this audio description tour, we examine 4 parts of the whole. The first is his video work, Enland, which plays on a large flat-screen TV on the gallery wall. The second and third are a Sudbury bedrock compilation map from Canada's Geological Survey and a copy of the Huron-Robertson Treaty, which are both framed and hung on the gallery wall. The fourth is an angle sculpture made of slotted steel, which hangs from the 19-foot ceiling 3 feet from the ground. The sculpture is approximately 4 feet by 4 feet by 4 feet and weighs 183 pounds. That's big. There are also many small sculptures made of rock and brass set on the wood floor, photographs of 3D rendered laboratory spaces, and a white desk with a computer monitor and binders of documents. The computer screen plays video with images and data from the Snow Plus experiment, a neutrino detector at Snow Lab. The artist was inspired by a strategy from theoretical physics, a way of thinking called holographic, and uses it to play with multiple dimensions. As he says, "I am interested in environmental studies and in physics and in the histories and philosophies of the unknown." In his multifaceted work in the exhibition, he has found multiple ways to represent how we understand and examine a place. He wants us to remember that Snow Lab and the experiments done by the scientists within it exist within a larger context of vast cosmic, geological, and human timescales.
Now let's explore a few of the components in Enland, The Holographic Principle. Please pause the recording and move to the next stop on the tour and play Chapter 5 when you arrive. This stop is straight ahead, 10 meters from the pedestal. Chapter 5, Enland by Joel Toms. This chapter describes the Enland video artwork by Joel Toms. Please note that the description is not in sync with the video. The chapter is 4 minutes and 19 seconds long.
You are now in front of a large flat-screen TV mounted on the gallery's wall. This chapter will describe specific parts of the video. It is approximately 17 minutes long and runs in a continual loop. It includes the following intersecting components: video footage that Tom's shot at Snow Lab, sweeping views of the surrounding wilderness of Northern Ontario marshes and forests, 3D rendered images of the laboratory spaces, text graphics, and voices of physicists. These components weave together historical, geographical, indigenous, and scientific contexts for the physical site of the Sudbury mine in which Snow Lab operates. Though you might hear a scientist's voice at some points, there are lengthy parts of this film with no audio. Pause this track to listen. Most gallery visitors don't take in the video in its entirety. They might arrive in the middle and leave when they want. This fragmentary experience echoes the technique Joel has used in creating the visual and verbal assemblage of the video. The video begins with a gray and white checked pattern on the screen. This pattern is commonly used as the blank slate in the graphic design software Photoshop, on top of which layers of images, graphics, and text are imposed. This checked pattern reappears throughout the video. The first sound we hear is a woman's voice, one of the scientists that Joel interviewed during his residency. She speaks about the need to change our worldview in order to understand the nature of subatomic particles. A shadow of the spinning steel sculpture appears. Text stylized as a three-dimensional font appears over top.
And land. Unvisible energies and forces bend, diffract, interfere.
The video then continues as a portrait rendered in fragments. These fragments include a geological map of the region that visualizes the geological impact of the meteor that created the Sudbury Basin 1.85 billion years ago. A black and white photo of the opening in the rock represents the Creighton mine that has operated here since 1901. Images of the Norite rock, a dense crystalline igneous granite that surrounds the Snow Lab, are shown. It also includes Joel's footage of moving through the dark tunnels and brightly lit labs at Snow Lab, where scientists work in lab coats and hard hats, as well as beautiful views of the marshland and forests in the fall season, with blue skies and fiery leaves. This footage is juxtaposed with text that describes the ongoing fight by the 21 First Nations in Northern Ontario, including Wanapite First Nation and Mississauga First Nation, to receive annuities from the mine, promised to them in 1850. Together, these video components tell a story of this place. Halfway through the video, this text appears over the images.
The landscape laboratory attempts to have intelligence with radical otherness. Matters beyond vision. Unphysical, yet ubiquitous. Legible in the rotations of the galaxies. To find relevant ways to think with such entities, researchers devise all manner of assemblages to burst the bubble of unknowing.
The video is sometimes opaque, sometimes fragmented, and sometimes poetic. It combines and recombines knowledges and worldviews in an attempt by Joel to sense the unknown.
Stay at this stop and go to the next track to hear interpretations of the video and some prompts for further reflection. Or move to the next stop, which is 3.5 meters behind you, and play Chapter 7. Chapter 6, Enland Interpretation and Prompts. This chapter provides you with opportunities to think about this video more. This chapter is 3 minutes long.
Imagine what happens to your senses 2 kilometers below the Earth. You are surrounded by rock and minerals, and embedded in the ongoing histories of peoples, ecologies, and technologies. You are far from everything familiar. The physicists of Snow Lab choose this site because the Norite rock shields their experiments from the omnipresent cosmic radiation of the surface of the Earth and the greater universe. The location is meant to hide, smother, and dampen this radiation. And yet, as a result, they hope it will also allow them to detect the undetectable. By blocking one thing, another is potentially amplified. This video brings us into the Snow Lab spaces. In one silent scene, we move along a tunnel, called a drift, that bridges the laboratories. It is a long, narrow path, lit by tubes of light on the ceiling. In another scene, the camera spins and moves up the walls of a vast cavern-like space that holds a multi-storied machine. More rooms have been captured in 3D images and then fragmented and overlaid on top of the video footage of the spinning space. The scientist narrates, "This leads to the many worlds interpretation of quantum mechanics. That what we experience is just one branch, one world in a whole multiverse. The world as we know it has three dimensions of space, length, width, and depth, plus one dimension of time. Using text graphics in the video, the artist tells us that some of the equations physicists work with require 10 and 11 dimensions to work. Is this new information or unexpected to you? How would it feel to be living in one possible dimension among many? And yet, as the artist proposes, the contracting and expanding of dimensions, the giving space to, allows for otherwise unthinkable connections. It is in this place, deep underground, that scientists grapple with the fact that they are working with a very limited toolkit, and that they need more diverse perspectives if humans are going to be able to make sense of the universe, to know the unknowable. One of the questions posed by this exhibition is, how can art be a part of that?
Pause to reflect on these questions, and then move to the next stop and play Chapter 7. The next stop on the tour is 3.5 meters away, behind you. Chapter 7, Map and Treaty. This chapter describes a map of the Sudbury Bedrock Compilation from Canada's Geological Survey, which is located on the wall beside the flat-screen TV, as well as a copy of the Robinson-Huron Treaty, which you are currently in front of. If you reach out, you can touch this wall and feel the frame that holds the treaty. This chapter is 5 minutes and 4 seconds long.
You are now in front of two large framed documents on the gallery wall. There is a multicolored map of the Sudbury Bedrock Compilation from Canada's Geological Survey, measuring 38 inches by 46 inches. There is also a copy of the Robinson-Huron Treaty, signed in 1850, from Library and Archives Canada, measuring 11 inches by 16.5 inches. Here is a more detailed description. The map shows a section of land northeast of Sudbury, with the smaller Windy Lake in the bottom left and the larger Wanapitay Lake in the top right. On the map, many rivers and waterways cover the land like interconnecting veins marked in blue. In the center of the map is an oblong, light orange shape with multicolored rings emanating from it. They are mustard, yellow, pink, purple, red, and green. This map shows the Sudbury Impact Structure, or Sudbury Basin. It is the third largest impact crater on Earth, and was formed 1.85 billion years ago. Today, the crater measures 62 kilometers long by 30 kilometers wide and is 15 kilometers deep. At the center is limestone, shale, and volcanic agglomerate. Different types of rock like norite and granite make up other rings around the crater. Mining companies were drawn to the emergence of copper and nickel deposits within the rock crater. They began building mines in the late 19th century. By 1915, Sudbury mines were providing an incredible 80% of the world's production of nickel. While this map provides information on the rich resources of this land, the artist also wants us to know that the Sudbury Basin is situated on the traditional territory of the Atikamekw Anishinaabe. This is why he includes a copy of the Robinson-Huron Treaty in his art installation. The framed copy of the treaty on display shows both of its pages. One page is covered with tiny black scripted handwriting, packed so densely that there are no margins. the other page has a few lines of script and is presented horizontally. The treaty is yellowed and shows wear at the creases where it has been folded. Below are the registration tools used when photographing an archival document. The treaty document states that it is an agreement made in the year 1850 at Sault Ste. Marie in the province of Canada between William Benjamin Robinson on behalf of Her Majesty the Queen and the leaders of the following First Nations: Atikamekw Anishinaabeg, Batchewana First Nations of Ojibways, Dokis First Nation, Ojibways of Garden River, Henvey Inlet First Nation, Magnetawan First Nation, Mississauga No. 8 First Nation, Nipissing First Nation, Serpent River First Nation, Sagamok First Nation, Shawanaga First Nation, Sheshugwaning First Nation, Thessalon First Nation, Wanapate First Nation, Wasaksing First Nation, Whitefish River First Nation, Ondek Omniganing First Nation, Chiging First Nation, Shagawanda First Nation, Zibasing First Nation, Wikwemikong, Unceded Indian Reserve No. 26. These are the communities, as the treaty states, quote, inhabiting and claiming the eastern and northern shores of Lake Huron, from Penetanguishene to Sault Ste. Marie, and thence to Batchewanang Bay on the northern shore of Lake Superior, end quote. The First Nations leaders granted the Crown mining, logging, and settling rights on the north and east shores of Lake Huron, excluding land that had already been set out for reservations. There are details about annual payments, including an augmentation clause. Our sincere apologies for any mispronunciations of the names of the First Nations communities.
To hear more about these documents and be given a reflection prompt, stay at this stop and play the next track. Or move on to the next stop, which is 3 meters behind you, and play Chapter 9 when you arrive. Chapter 8, Treaty and Map Interpretation and Prompts. This chapter provides interpretations and prompts for further reflection about the map of the Sudbury Bedrock Compilation from Canada's Geological Survey and a copy of the Robinson-Huron Treaty. The chapter is 2 minutes and 56 seconds long.
By providing these two documents, Joel helps us to reflect on interconnected components of land. These include the comet that hit northern Ontario so long ago, and the resulting emergence of copper and nickel deposits within its rock. Today, the land is both a major mining area and the site of a debated treaty between the Ontario and federal governments and the Anishinaabeg nations of the Lake Huron area, who are the descendants from the nations that entered into the treaty with the British Crown. The treaty is also a government-to-government document signed between First Nations leaders and the British Crown. It was intended to make room for European settlement, for First Nations to share the wealth of the land in exchange for financial payments, but that First Nations would retain the right to use the land for hunting and fishing. What is not known from just looking at the treaty, however, is that even though the agreement stipulated that the amount of annuities paid to First Nations would increase, the payments have not been increased since 1874 and remain at $4 annually. In January 2021, the case to fight this breach of contract entered into its third phase. The compensation owed to First Nations communities will be determined in the coming years. This includes past payments owed, as well as future payments. Though the previous cases have been ruled in favor of the First Nations, the government of Ontario has decided to appeal. As the artist states, there are many different layers of knowledge and desire and expectation here. Both the Geological Survey map and the treaty are material objects that explore land beyond its straightforward depiction in a photograph or painting. For the artist, these documents represent different scales of the imperceptible. While SnowLab scientists are searching for the imperceptible particles called dark matter, Joel's work points to other imperceptible elements, like time, relationships, natural resources, and economies. Here is a reflection for you. Think about the land you're on now. What do you know about the history, geology, and ecology of this place? Try to imagine the lives, relationships, and politics that have played out across this place. Hold these visible and invisible layers in your mind.
This concludes the description of the map and treaty. Move to the next stop, 3 meters away, behind you. Play Chapter 9 when you arrive. Chapter 9, The Bulk, Frameworks 1. This chapter describes Joel Thom's sculpture, The Bulk. The chapter is 2 minutes and 17 seconds long. If you reach out gently, you may touch the slowly rotating sculpture.
The final component of Enland that we are examining is called the Bulk Frameworks 1, one of two large-scale sculptures that are suspended from the 19-foot-high ceiling in front of you. It is 4 feet by 4 feet by 4 feet and hangs 3 feet from the ground. The form of the sculpture is called a hypercube or N-cube. Here is a more in-depth description. This large cube frame is created using silver-slotted steel angle irons, which create smaller cubes that interlock to create the whole piece. There are no faces to the cubes, only edges. And although there are many overlapping metal pieces in the center, the gallery wall remains visible through the sculpture. The object hangs from the ceiling by one of its corners so that the square is turned 45 degrees. The main body of the sculpture consists of 4 cubes, 2 stacked on 2. The interior of the form holds additional parallel and perpendicular angle irons. More angle irons come out from the 2 larger faces of the square. They come to a point that holds a Fresnel lens, which is the size of an adult hand. Fresnel lenses are compact composite lenses that have a magnifying capability. They are used in lighthouses to amplify the interior light so that it is visible from greater distances. The metal is a hard, dull gray with oval holes that repeat every inch or so along the entire length of each piece. The Fresnel lens refracts any light in the gallery, and there are rainbows inside it. As the sculpture rotates slowly with the help of a disco ball motor, it creates a flat, dense, and changeable shadow on the wooden floor below.
To hear more about this sculpture, including interpretations and prompts, stay at this stop and play the next track, Chapter 10. Otherwise, move to the next artwork of the tour and play Chapter 12. The next stop is in a room that is 20 meters away, the small arm of the gallery's L-shaped floor plan. Follow the path on the floor. Chapter 10, The Bulk Interpretation and Prompts. This chapter provides additional interpretations and reflection prompts for the bulk sculpture. The chapter is 3 minutes long.
Throughout this installation, the artist Joel Thoms has been playing with the concept of dimensionality and making space for multiple dimensions within our understanding of the universe. He is making a link to the ways of thinking used by physicists who try to make sense of a universe where 84% of matter is undetectable. The title of this work is The Bulk. In physics, the term bulk is given to a hypothetical higher dimensional space within which the 11 dimensions of our universe may exist. The 11 dimensions are the 3 dimensions we can see, plus time, plus the 7 extra dimensions that we can't see, but that M-theory theorizes are all around us. The artist considers these sculptures as shadows of a 7-dimensional artifact. The Greek philosopher Plato famously used an allegory of the cave in which the shadows on the wall are a representation of a lesser dimension of reality, the only experience of reality that humans have access to. Think of the rotating frame as a shadow of a higher dimension reality that we live in, although it is imperceptible to us. Are we meant to look into the Fresnel lens? Into other dimensions? Or does the lens project those dimensions out to us? In its entirety, Joel's installation, Enland, the holographic principle, pulls our attention in multiple directions. He wants us to think critically about where dark matter scientists are working and how they are thinking. It is a kind of artistic investigation and experimentation. Like the experiments in Snow Lab, Joel attempts in multiple, sometimes indirect, ways to understand the imperceptible yet inextricable forces that make up our world. The exhibition title, Drift, draws from the mining term for a horizontal tunnel. In this case, it refers to the passageway in the copper and nickel mine stretching from the mining elevator to the clean lab spaces of Snow Lab. We have been reflecting on the forms and energies that connect scientific research to art, landscapes, cultures, and histories. It is also striking that the action of drifting is also to stray from a path or standard. We hope that this audio exploration of the intersections between art and science has felt like a journey off the beaten path.
This chapter will recite the extended label for Enland, the Holographic Principle by Joel Toms. It is written by curator Sunny Kerr. It is 3 minutes and 19 seconds long. There are labels on the walls of the gallery for each artwork, which includes biographical information of the artist, the title of the artwork, and what materials were used. Here is Joel Toms.
Joel Toms. Born Toronto, Ontario in 1981. Title, Enland, the Holographic Principle, 2021. Materials, 4K video, 5.1 sound, steel slotted angle sculptures with Fresnel lenses, mirror ball motors, Robinson-Huron Treaty, Library and Archives Canada, RG10, Volume 1844/IT148. Microfilm reel, T-9938. Acid burn rocks from Sudbury Landscape. Sudbury Basin Shattercone rock sculpture from Sudbury's Science North. Sloan Digital Sky Survey plug plate from the collection of Stéphane Courteau. Isomorph sea prints. Sculptures of brass and rock sourced from Sudbury's Dynamic Earth. Work desk with computer showing group portrait of Snow Plus detector video. The Robinson-Huron Treaty annuity case court documents. Physics essays by Ning Kiang Song and Aaron Vincent. Sudbury bedrock compilation map from Canada's Geological Survey. Neutrino particles and shadows. The following is the extended label written by curator Sunny Kerr. Joel Toms borrows the imagery, materials, and strategies of physics, composing them in an art context to probe the ecological ethics of our time. For example, borrowing a strategy from theoretical physicists, he plays with higher dimensions throughout his installation. Made explicit in his metal hypercube sculptures titled The Bulk Frameworks. The provocative flattening and layering of complex dimensional objects continues in his isomorphic prints, in which he layers flattened 3D scans of Snow Lab experiments to expose gaps and hidden strata within scientific classification methodologies. Tom's installation suggests a multidimensional view of the Snow Lab site, which he refers to as holographic, reading context and agency through vast cosmic and geological timescales. The piece reflects on interconnected components of land. The comet that hit the location 1.85 billion years ago, and the resulting emergence of copper and nickel deposits within its rock. How the land is both a major mining site and the object of debated government treaties with indigenous peoples. And how the rock itself isolates Snow Lab from the interference of surface radiation, so that experiments can search for rare cosmic particles.
This concludes the description of Joel Toms' Enland, the Holographic Principle. Move to the next artwork, Blank Spots by Nadia Lichtig, and play chapter 12 when you arrive. The first stop for this artwork is located in another room in the gallery. Follow the path for 20 meters. Chapter 12, Introduction to Blank Spots by Nadia Lichtig. This chapter introduces the large installation by Nadia Lichtig called Blank Spots. It is an installation that includes light and sound lasting 28 minutes. Curator Sunny Kerr's commentary about the artwork can be found in Chapter 15 or as a printed label on the wall.
As you move towards this stop, perhaps you notice the soundscape of breathing or a chorus of voices. Welcome to Nadia Lichtig's multimedia installation, Blank Spots. Right now, you are positioned close to a low square pedestal in the center of the room. If you recall, we described the gallery as in the shape of a sideways L. The part of the gallery where Lichtig's artworks are located is in the small arm of the L, but it feels like the biggest room because it has a two-story high ceiling. The room is almost 15 meters long and 7 meters wide. Blank Spots is on the floor in front of you. It is composed of 6 squares of cream-colored canvas, laid out to form a large rectangle. Each square is about 2 by 2 meters, so the entire work is huge, over 3 by 5 meters. The squares of canvas are displayed on an ankle-height wood platform, with 6 spotlights hanging overhead, one above each square. It has the feeling of a stage in a theater. The spotlights cast light directly on the squares of canvas intermittently, illuminating several at a time, softly blinking on and off in sync with the breathing and singing. Each square of fabric has a different pattern, though the color scheme is similar, shades of brown, some darker and some lighter. 2 squares feature a pattern made from lines of short dashes. These were done using a technique called frottage, French for rubbing. When you were a child, did you ever make a rubbing of a leaf using a crayon and a piece of paper? This is the same action Nadia used, though she has imprinted the pattern of the texture of a floor, perhaps pebbles or small bricks, using graphite. On other squares, the markings are more random in size and look like blotches or creases in the fabric. Different hues of brown overlap on the cream color of the canvas. These are stains created by the artist, who use the fabric and cleaning liquids to hand wash floors. But not just any floors. The artist chose locations where a crime has occurred, in places like Bremen and Berlin in Germany, Aix-en-Provence and Montpellier in France, and Zamość and Poznań in Poland.
Move to the next stop on the tour, about 10 meters away. There will be a wall on your left and the low wood platform on your right. Play Chapter 13 when you arrive at the stop. Chapter 13. Focus on the light of Nadia Lichtig's Blank Spots. This chapter invites you to focus on the light element in the artwork.
Perhaps your breath started to get faster when you learned that some of these canvas squares were made at places where crimes have taken place. Nadia does not tell us what these crimes were or who was involved, only that they have occurred. She is trying to capture or record the indiscernible changes in energy when such an act has taken place. Move slowly away from the gallery wall and toward the raised platform. Stretch your arm out and hold it over the artwork. Can you feel the slight shift in temperature when the spotlight casts light on your skin? The artist plays with light and dark and warm and cool, attempting to illuminate or capture something she knows has occurred but cannot witness. She focuses her attention on the traces of the experience instead. For example, dust and markings on the floor. How does Nadia's work connect to the themes explored in the Drift exhibition? As she contends, even the neglected dust at crime scenes shares its atomic and molecular composition with plants and humans, even stars and galaxies. While dark matter researchers look to the galaxies, she scans the Earth for the traces of matter that do not carry the aura of grandeur and glory associated with the stars.
Move to the next stop on the tour by using the wall on your left to guide you. This stop is back at the low square pedestal, about 13 meters away. Play Chapter 14 when you arrive. Chapter 14. Focus on the sound in Nadia Lichtig's Blank Spots. This chapter invites you to touch the art installation and focus on its soundscape.
Facing the low square pedestal, reach down to feel what is displayed on top of it. The pedestal is 1 by 1.5 meters high. It holds 6 stacks of loose leaf paper. Each stack holds about 300 photocopies of one of the patterns from the canvas squares. You are welcome to feel how high the paper is stacked. Afterwards, spend some time listening to the soundscape that accompanies blank spots. What are the sounds, words, and tones that you can identify? Sound is a critical element of this artwork, and in particular, the chorus of overlapping voices, sometimes speaking and sometimes singing. The soundscape is broadcast from 6 speakers set on the gallery floor. It creates an all-encompassing atmosphere. Nadia is interested in expanding the ways that music is composed and performed. The stacks of paper actually record unique musical scores she has created. They are unusual. One side of the paper holds a reproduction of one of the patterns from the squares. Over each one, she has written words, traced the outlines of some of the shapes, or overlaid typed text. The other side of the paper is divided into two, an excerpt from a text that the artist is drawn towards, and instructions for a song based on that excerpt. Here is a description of one of the scores. On the pattern side of the paper, Nadia has outlined the main splotch with a dotted line, so that it looks like a map of a country. She has drawn straight lines at different angles, from one side of the paper to the other. Along each line is a word in cursive, though the words are difficult to discern. The word that appears most often is breath. The excerpt of the text on the score is from a book by Karen Barad, entitled Meeting the Universe Halfway, Quantum Physics and the Entanglement of Matter and Meaning, published by Duke University Press in 2007. Here is what the text says. To be entangled is not simply to be intertwined with another, as in the joining of separate entities, but to lack an independent, self-contained existence. Existence is not an individual affair. Individuals do not pre-exist their interactions. Rather, individuals emerge through and as a part of their entangled interrelating. Which is not to say that emergence happens once and for all, as an event or as a process that takes place according to some external measure of space and time. But rather that time and space, like matter and meaning, come into existence, are iteratively reconfigured through each interaction, thereby making it impossible to differentiate in any absolute sense between creation and renewal. Beginning and returning, continuity and discontinuity, here and there, past and future. And here is the score, or instructions for the composition that is inspired by this text. It takes the form of a mathematical equation. To be entangled. For the lines indicating words, apart from breath, singing each word following its line. The intonation and pitch is varying, depending on the size of the square the line is crossing. The smaller, the higher. For the lines indicating breath, breathing quicker for the line crossing smaller square, breathing slower for the line crossing bigger square. Interchanging X to Y, to be repeated N times. X. S1 plus S2 plus A. Creation, breath, breath, beginning, breath, continuity, breath, breath, here, breath, past, breath, breath. Y. T plus B1 plus B2. Renewal, breath, breath, returning, breath, discontinuity, breath, breath, there, breath, future, breath, breath, creation, renewal, breath, 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 beginning, returning, breath, breath, continuity, discontinuity, breath, 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 here, there, breath, breath, past, future, breath, 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 creation, renewal, breath, 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 beginning, breath, breath, continuity, breath, 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 here, breath, past, breath, breath,
creation, breath, breath, beginning, breath, continuity, breath, breath, here, breath, future, breath, breath.
How would this song sound to you? These instructions are for voices, like soprano and tenor, but no instruments. It can be interpreted in many different ways, depending on how the equations are filled. Can you imagine it, even though you might never hear it? How would you compare the work by Joel Toms and this one by Nadia? There's resonance in the way that each artist combines and recombines, and layers modes of representation of unknown matters and intangible experiences. Can you relate these skills to how scientists explore invisible phenomenon? What other ways do you see the work of these artists intersecting with ideas of dark matter or of the search for things that can't be easily detected?
Chapter 15, Label Information for Blank Spots by Nadia Lichtig. This chapter recites the extended label for blank spots by Nadia Lichtig. It is written by curator Sunny Kerr and hangs on the wall beside the artwork. It includes biographical information of the artist, the title of the artwork, and what materials were used.
Nadia Lichtig, Blank Spots, 2021, ongoing. Frottage on canvas, theater lights, sound, and digital sequence, 28 minutes. Collection of the artist. Blank Spots is a series of frottages taken in a geographic location where traumatic historical events have taken place. The artist has cleaned the floor with canvas and cleaning liquids, or copied the structure of the floor using graphite. Frottages from new locations will be added over time to this ongoing piece. The accompanying audio includes sounds of breathing, rhythmic speech, and singing. A synchronized rhythmic sequence of sound and theater lighting carefully frames and reframes the frottages. For Lichtig, not unlike a scientist experimenting in astroparticle physics, the artist reaches into the dark, looking for traces of ancient light. Scientists who study astrophysics infer the presence of dark matter by studying galaxies. Experiments at Snow Lab use the Earth as a filter. Lichtig is scanning the Earth with blank spots, an investigation of inconspicuous, neglected matter. Cosmologists tell us that the matter of which we are made, the atoms and molecules that make up the plants, animals, oceans, and even all the other planets and stars, is dust ejected from ancient exploding stars. Blank Spots composes dust understood as remainders of experience. Indeed, the dust Blank Spots evokes is a poor dust, not carrying the aura or nobility and glory associated with the stars. The artist thanks Jürgen Kerianen, Adair Reddish, and Mark Berkstedt for lighting technical support, and sound technician Christian Boijou.
This is the end of the tour for Drift, Art and Dark Matter. The tactile floor markings will guide you back to the first stop. Thank you. Chapter 16, Thank You and Credits. This chapter concludes the tour and provides the thank yous and credits. It is 1 minute and 17 seconds long. Thank you for joining us on this audio description tour of Drift, Art and Dark Matter. If you used a tablet in the gallery, please return it to the front desk. Should you wish to listen to this audio description tour again, the audio files can be found and downloaded through a link on the gallery's website. This audio description tour was produced by Carleton University Art Gallery in collaboration with Carla Ayukawa and 8 community consultants with low vision. It was developed as a Creative Access Working Groups project funded by a Canada Council for the Arts Sector Innovation Grant in partnership with Critical Distance Centre for Curators and Tangled Art and Disability. It was also supported by the Mame Jackson Experiential Learning Fund. Drift, Art and Dark Matter is a residency and exhibition project generated by Agnes Etherington Art Centre, the Arthur B. MacDonald Canadian Astroparticle Physics Research Institute, and Snow Lab. Recording and editing is by Nicole Bedford. Voice work is by Ian McMullen, Fiona Wright, Frederick Imad, and Anne-Marie Iamolo. We value your feedback. Please email comments and questions to fiona.wright@carleton.ca. FIONA.WRIGHT@carleton.ca.